I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Touch. That down there. You can go over there. Bingo. Okay, 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 do.
You ready?
Sure is.
Welcome to podcast episode. In fact, just check.
Yeah, all good.
Here we go. Welcome to podcast episode number 856. We are the Fight Disciples. This is your MMA review from the weekend just gone. And we will include a little bit of action from last Thursday in Paris. Atmosphere looked great, even though there was shrapnel all over the smart cage. And of course, Miami. Loads of talking points coming off the back of UFC 299. My days. You thinking of getting yourself some neon pink shorts, mate? You thinking of get yourself locked in for the summer holidays and then budgie smugglers? I think you'd look tremendous in them for International Fight Week.
Mate, I love it. I love that. I love the fact that the UFC have realised how much of a star Sean O'Malley is. And they're like, mate, what shorts? What colour shorts do you want, for God's sake? You know, I think there should be more of that. I encourage that. I encourage that bit of individualism. Because I remember when everyone used to have their own shorts and everyone's own shorts had their own sponsors. And now, UFC went, listen, we're going to put everyone in a kit because this is getting ridiculous now. Your shorts look like NASCAR shorts. And now look at the Octagon. The Octagon is NASCAR. I don't know whether you could get another advert on that canvas or on them posts. So a little bit of hypocrisy there by the UFC. So I love it. I love the pink shorts. I love the camo shorts for Bryce Mitchell. Go for it, man. Let people do it. They look wicked.
Neon pink. Don't think it's my colour. Gonna be honest.
I look good in neon pink.
Do you?
Neon pink spandex as well. That's just, you know, it's a bit of me that. It's a bit of me.
Okay. Listen, man. There's been doubts over the last few years from a lot of fight fans about Sean O'Malley. Where's he at? Is he any good? Is he all that? He's only fighting cans. He's crushing this guy, he's crushing that guy. Yeah, but Cheeto beat him. The doubt is now well and truly left. If it hadn't already left by the time you got to Miami, it most certainly has left now. Not only has he beaten Piotr Jan, Aljamain Sterling, he has now put manners in an incredible way on Cheeto Vera. And you can throw holes in the resume of Cheeto Vera. Should he have been in a title fight? Should it have been Mirab? Should it have been this person? Should it have been that person? Listen, Sean O'Malley can only beat what's in front of him. And Sean O'Malley has risen since 2020 in that defeat to Cheeto Vera like a phoenix from the flames. He is the absolute business. I'm going to get into the intricacies of what he actually did at the weekend, but just from a star point of view, we are crying out for them in the UFC. We don't know what Conor's doing. He's out there promoting a movie at the moment, enjoying himself. He's becoming the face of the movie business. John Jones is out injured. Israel Adesanya taking a little bit of a back seat, re-energizing himself before he comes back and makes another onslaught for the title. So where are the superstars? Where are the people that are going to capture your imagination? Well, it was the fella dressed in neon pink on Saturday night in Miami. He's the guy, mate. Straight out of a Grand Theft Auto video game, doing bad man things for 25 minutes in an octagon. Looking amazing.
He looked absolutely amazing. You know, everything he says he was, he is. You know, he talked the talk for a long time, and now he's absolutely walking the walk. You fake it till you make it, don't you, in sport? You know, you fake it till you make it. Ali used to point to that. He used to talk about the fact that, you know, he told everyone he was the greatest long before he even thought he was the greatest. He used to just say he was the greatest to get everybody talking about him. And Sean O'Malley told us he was the best bantamweight on the planet. He told us what he would do. He told us that he would be the champion. And because of the meteoric rise that he had, and it's a similar opportunities that, say, Paddy the Baddy's getting and Ian Gary's getting, and that is they're starting the UFC career on numbered cards, on main cards. We've seen it again coming up at UFC 300. With all due respect, what the fuck is Bo Nickel doing anywhere near that main card when you look at the number of former champions on the undercard? Well, I'll tell you why he's there. The UFC believe that he is a future pound-for-pound star. And when you believe you've got the potential to be a future pound-for-pound star, you get big spots on big cards. And O'Malley was gifted with that. But with that came a lot of, wait a minute, he's on there and he's only fighting Chris Moutinho. He's only fighting this guy. He's only fighting that guy. But you're right with what you've just said, Adam. A fighter can only beat the man put in front of him. And now he's got to the sharp end of the sword. Now he's got to the peak of the iceberg. He's fighting the best guys in the bantamweight division. A guy with a narrative, the former champion, the current champion. And his last two performances especially have been nothing short of outstanding. Icing Aljamain Sterling and now just completely butchering Marlon Vera. 90% of this weight class does not hear that final bell. Marlon Vera only lasted five rounds because he's Marlon Vera and he's tough as fucking old boots. Did you see the picture before and after? He looked like he'd aged 20 years. Sean O'Malley absolutely battered him for five rounds. He made a statement. He is the best bantamweight on the planet. You know what? According to him, he might even be the best featherweight on the planet as well.
Get to that in a minute. Round number two in particular in this fight is just... if you like watching striking, I spend a lot of time watching my kids on kickboxing mats, and obviously in and around that, there's some good kids in that gym, some younger than them. Well, not younger than them, but older than them, right up into the teens. And I just love watching elite striking. I love watching it. I love the way that people can master range. I love the use of feints, getting people to bite on certain things in order to then counter them. And in a 5-minute period in that second round for me, I'm watching it going, this geezer's just putting on a masterclass now. This is phenomenal what he was doing. And it didn't slow down. When you get to round number four, and Cheeto's team are at him going, mate, we're going to have to do something different here because we can't get in on him. He's just too good at range. He's too fast. You're biting on everything that he's doing. We're just going to have to make this horrible in the dogfight. Just run into the fire and swing. And fingers crossed we're catching him with something. Get in there. And when Cheeto did, and that's testament to Cheeto, that he's got the bravery to just go, fuck it, man. I could get iced in a minute. But this is my title fight. I'm going in.
Yeah, taking me shot.
Sean O'Malley went with him. Yeah. He poured petrol on the fire. He just went, you want a dog? Okay, sound, mate, sound. If you want to do it here, we'll do it here. But I'm as tough as you. So we'll do it here, and then I'll go back to range.
Yeah.
Because you're not touching me tonight. It was just, like I say, if you like watching striking at the very, very highest level, and you know what you're watching, if you know how someone is controlling range with feet, fence, just diversity. Mate, he is just outstanding. He really, really is outstanding.
There was times in the fight, funny you should mention round two. That was the one I flagged in round two. I presume that was the 10-8 round two.
Yeah, I haven't seen it on the cards, but I scored it a 10-8 in the moment. I went, fuck me, mate. That's just unreal.
Yeah, and it was like... when he was floating around and he was switching stances and he'll be standing orthodox and he'll throw a big right hand and step through with it. So he's automatically stepping into southpaw and then he'll come with a big southpaw uppercut and then he'll pivot to the side. Honestly, in my notes, I was like, it's like watching someone dance. It's like watching someone on the dance floor, like Strictly Come Dance, and just completely mastered the art, completely confident. No matter where your stance is, no matter where you are inside the cage, he was completely confident, zen, at ease, in his happy place, just enjoying himself, just flowing. just letting it flow and not overthinking anything, you know. And he was just picking Cheeto off, and like that knee that he hit Cheeto with in round number two, which just like it sounded like a shotgun. Bang, right under Cheeto's chin. Head goes everywhere. Cheeto had no business carrying on for them, and it's testament to Cheeto that he took shots like that and still carried on the fight and still lasted 25 minutes. Cheeto left a piece of himself inside the octagon. We often talk about these big fights when a fighter just left a bit of himself in there. And Cheeto did, and so he should, because it's a world title fight. He spent his whole career to get here. Sean O'Malley didn't leave himself a piece of himself inside the octagon, though. Sean O'Malley danced his way to one of the most spectacularly one-sided UFC title fight title defenses I've ever seen. He was completely and utterly on a different level. And everything Cheeto did, he had an answer for. He was too quick, too fast, hit too hard. And when it was bite down on your gum shield and go for it time, he bit down on his gum shield and went for it time too, and was still too fast, and was still too sharp, and was still too skillful. It was a complete and utter masterclass, a complete shutdown. I felt for Cheeto because I like Cheeto a lot, and I love Jason Perillo. You know, Jason Perillo's given us some of the most amazing moments with Bisping and everything else. But sometimes you've just got to stand back and go, wow, Sean O'Malley is top 5 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. I don't care what you say. That was absolutely phenomenal. Champions in the UFC don't get defenses against top contenders like that. They don't perform like everyone can be knocked out. Everyone can submit someone. But to go on, you're the next best guy, and to dish them up like that was something quite spectacular. It was unbelievable.
I know that this was a little bit different, but it reminds you a little bit of like what Max did to Calvin Kattar, on a different level on that particular night. And that's what Sean was like. And the immediate aftermath is going to be, right, well, Mirab's next, right? Mirab's next in this division, and that's who Sean's, and he won't do that to Mirab. Well, hang on a minute. Just have a look at Sean's career so far. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's fought strikers, but there's wrestlers in there. Aljamain Sterling's an elite wrestler, mate. An elite wrestler. And he couldn't get his hands on him. And the reason for this is because of how he masters that range. The way that he can... You're too far out. So by the time you're thinking, well, I've got to try and go in, he's seen you. And his reaction time is so fast, you're chinned. So if you're going to shoot from right out there, he's going to see you coming. And you're going to walk straight onto an uppercut. You're going to walk onto a big straight right hand. You're going to walk onto a knee up the middle. You're going to walk onto something. So it's all well and good saying, well, Mirab will get him. Mirab will keep trying to get him. I'll give you that as part of the argument. He'll keep trying. Yeah. Will he get him is the question. Okay, people will say, well, Peoria Yan managed to take him down. Yeah, he did, because Peoria Yan is a kickboxer.
Yeah.
Who managed to disguise with his hands and his feet the takedown attempt. What happened? Sean got back up.
Mm-hmm.
He got back up.
Sean's got a great ground game as well.
He's got a fantastic ground game. Are Mirab's hands and feet good enough to disguise the takedown? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think they are, mate. I'm going to be honest. He's got a great wrestling game as Mirab. And he will be relentless and he'll keep asking the question. But Sean's mastering a range is just on a different level to anybody in that division. And I think he can keep him off.
I think there's right now, I think you're right. I think right now there's, I've never really thought of it like this before in terms of a UFC contender. But if I'm Mirab, I want Sean at the apex.
Small octagon.
It's the smallest octagon the UFC use. It's fucking tiny. And for Sean O'Malley, that's 25 minutes of hell because you haven't got the space. Did you see how big that octagon was on Saturday
night? Sean O'Malley is not fighting at the apex, though, is he?
And I know. You know what I mean, though. But
yeah, of course.
Very few fighters talk about the size of the octagon. That was a giant octagon in Miami at the weekend. Why? Because, hey, I don't know why. The real reason, but I would suggest Sean O'Malley as the champion, as the main event went. We're using the big octagon, yeah? Because, you know, I like a bit of space. And the UFC obviously have obliged them that. And as the champion, I've got no issue with that whatsoever. And I think that would be Mirab's problem. the size of that octagon is comfortable and plays into the hands of Sean O'Malley. And that will not change, because Sean O'Malley's entire career at this level will certainly be in big, sold-out arenas inside the Giants octagon. And that's what me and I will have to contend with. It's a lot of space. Chito, relentless pressure. I thought Chito, especially in the first round, usually a slow starter, thought after the first minute or two, Chito actually did start fast. He warmed into it, exactly what he needed to do. But Sean was just too sharp for him. Those single shots, those in a completely different style from Michael Venom Page. But he has that range. And you think, like, I need to take three or four steps to get to him. And you take one step, and he's leaped in, and he's hit, and he's gone out the back door. And you're like, can I wait a minute? You weren't even in range, and you've just clocked me with the right hand. And I think that's something that will play against
Mirab,
should he get his title opportunity. That big size octagon, Sean O'Malley's just, it's just impossible to pin him down. His footwork's too good.
Now, Sean has asked for a different fight. Now, of course, I'm coming at this from a purely selfish point of view. He says he'll get on a plane, he'll come to Madrid, and he'll have a go with Ilya Topuria at 145. I'm not against it, you know. I know that there'll be people out there going, shut up, man. He needs to defend the title. He needs to go in against Mirab. He needs to do it against this guy. He needs to do it against that guy. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I'm here for shit that makes my balls hot. And that absolutely tingles everything. Sean O'Malley versus Ilya Topuria in front of a fucking Bernabeu in Madrid. Are you kidding me? If the UFC book that, you're going to mourn and say that he's not defending his bantamweight title. Jog on, man. You're going to be booking a ticket. You're going to be getting on a flight, and you're going to be heading yourself down to the fucking Madrid, aren't you? That's what you're going to be doing, getting dead excited about that fight, because stylistically, it works. Ilya is so well-rounded. His boxing, his range control, his use of feints and setups is sensational, and he can also use his hands and feet in order to set up ground game. Big questions for Sean O'Malley. Huge questions. Don't know. I'd probably back Ilya to come through that fight if I'm really, really honest, just because of how tight I think Ilya Topuria's work is. But you never know, because that motherfucker at the weekend with his range control and his sniper-like shots, could he catch him? Jai Herbert caught him. Yeah. Are you telling me that Sean O'Malley can't catch him? Come on. If they book that fight, I ain't mourning. I'm not going to mourn and say, he should be defending.
I don't think anyone would necessarily moan, because it's a great fight. But the issue you've got is that, listen, there's only one Conor McGregor. There's only one guy that's able to dictate whatever he does next and choose to jump wherever he wants to go, because he is such a massive pay-per-view star. Everybody else that's in the two-weight club, you know, the Amanda Nunes's and the Daniel Cormier's and the Henry Cejudo's of this world, they cleaned up in one area, and then it made sense to go to the next area. Israel Adesanya, it made sense for him to go to lightweight. Yeah, man, let's face it. Nobody left at middleweight to have a go at the moment. Go for it, man. Go and take on Jan Blachowicz. You've earned the right to try and join that club. Neither of these guys have earned the right yet. And that needs to be something, because the two-weight club is a very, very elite club in the sport of MMA. You're in that club. You're in the great conversation, aren't you? So
it's not making sense. Stop it. Well, exactly. It's not making sense.
And the other thing is, obviously, I think for Sean it's slightly different, because there's really only two guys that jump off the page, and that's Mirab, of course, and Corey Sandhagen. They're the two guys that jump off the page. Jan's just done Yadong. Aljo's still kind of flitting between two weight classes. So Yudo's just been done by Mirab. So there's only really Mirab and Corey Sandhagen available. Mirab's there, man. He's there at every fucking event in his suit, standing forward, going, give me the shot. Mirab's got to get the next shot. But when you look at featherweight as well, you look at the fact that Volk absolutely deserves the rematch. Max Holloway, if he comes through against Gaethje unscathed, which is a massive, massive ask, absolutely deserves the opportunity to win his belt back. Now it's not owned by Volkanovski. And Brian Ortega's just had one of the greatest comeback wins of all time. So he's right there. And then you've got, like, Mirab, Ivloev, that makes sense, a featherweight as well. So I get it. I know what you're saying.
Shut up, man. You're normally the outrageous one, not me. Come on, what's the matter with you? Do you not want to go to Madrid and watch that in the Bernabeu?
We're going to Madrid. We're going to Bernabeu, but Sean won't be there. And the reason being is the biggest, most lucrative market for this sport is the US pay-per-view market. Sean O'Malley is not fighting anywhere outside of North America for as long as he's got that belt, and maybe more.
Boo!
Company man, boo!
Mate, he was great. He was absolutely fantastic. A wonderful performance. It is going to be Mirab. It's going to be interesting to see when and where they do it. International Fight Week, maybe? Turn it around quick.
Hey.
Go on.
Hey, let's make a lightweight fucking main event, shall we? Let's make a lightweight new champion contender. Come on.
Hang on. We all saw the live pick show last week, didn't we? We all saw that, ladies and gentlemen. Who backed the diamond?
Did you?
Who backed the diamond? You know who backed the diamond.
When we did the final preview show on TNT, to be fair, I did go with Dustin Poirier.
Typical
Nick Pete, hedge your bets. Two different platforms, two different picks. Never be wrong.
What a fight. Jeez. I mean last week, fight fans were blessed last week. You had Thursday night, you had Friday night, you had Saturday night, right across multiple franchises, multiple sports. And there were loads of people all over the world that had a different opinion on what the most exciting, most entertaining, the best fight was. The majority, if you're a fan of both and you know what you're watching, the majority on paper would have said that Dustin Poirier versus Benoit Saint-Denis is the best fight on paper. It's just got everything. Yes. Can it live up to our expectation? Yes, it fucking can. 7.5 minutes of awesome. Just awesome. Both men being absolutely awesome with their hands, with their feet, with their grappling. It was mixed martial arts at its very, very highest. Heart, will, determination, skill for 7.5 minutes. Mate, I was on the edge of my seat screaming. Mm-hmm. Very rarely nowadays, unless one of your mates is involved in a fight, right? And we do have a couple of pals that do actually participate in this mad little sport. So you do get emotionally invested sometimes, right? But normally, I can sit there and just enjoy it. I can just enjoy it. And not make any noise. My family's in bed, whatever it may be. I'll just sit there and enjoy it and go, fuck it, that's amazing. Mate, I walk the house up. For the first time in a long time, I walked the house up yelling at the television with Poirier and Saint-Denis knocking fuck out of each other for 7.5 minutes. It were absolutely crackers.
It were insane. I watched it Sunday morning with me Cocoa Pops, and I was just screaming and shouting at the TV for the full 7.5 minutes because I didn't know the result. I deliberately stayed away from it.
That's the best way.
Yeah, and I flashed it on. And I was just like, and this was the one, you know, I build them towards this. I watched the main card first, went back and watched the prelims, but, you know, a couple of great fights, lovely finish from Jack Della Maddalena. We'll come on to that in a second. Michael Page getting things going. I'm like, all right, sound. All right. It's solid. This is the meat of the jelly. Yeah, this is it. Come on, let's go. And then when they came out and just started throwing down, and Benoit's setting that pace, and he's throwing absolutely everything. And then they're transitioning. And then at one point, well, on multiple occasions, Dustin's trying to guillotine the Frenchman to make amazing headlines. But then the Frenchman's coming back and he's neck cranking him and he's rear naked choking him, and Dustin's fighting out of it. And then they're smashing each other on the jaw. I was just like, this is absolutely incredible. On every level, this is incredible. And then Benoit just got so excited in the moment in that round two that he just pressed and pressed and pressed. And it's just in those moments when Poirier's pressed against the fence, when he looks like he's about to wilt, when most guys would have tapped by now, that Dustin's just still in there. And he's just got the intelligence and the experience enough to just have the composure to be covering up and just looking for spaces. And when he lands that bam, 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 shot, little shot left, that done it. Then the right hand, then he jumps. Oh, mate, I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely amazing. What a finish for Dustin Poirier, and what a statement to the world to say, us established pay-per-view stars in the lightweight division, we're not quite done yet.
Mate.
This gate cheat now, Poirier, boss.
And do you know something? Fair play to the pair of them, because Gaethje taking on that fight with Fiziev, that made a little bit more sense because Fiziev had risen. He got himself into the top 10. I think he was 6 or 7 at that time. So it made the sense. And you're thinking, okay, this is the moment, the changing the guard moment. Is he? Is he up to that standard? And the fight was amazing. We were there live for it. And Gaethje rose and showed his class. This was even more of a risk because, yeah, we know Benoit Saint-Denis. Fans of this know Benoit Saint-Denis, but the casual fan out there is like going, hey, number 12, fight Dustin Poirier beat Conor McGregor, mate. I know who Dustin Poirier is. Who's this French fella? I don't know who. Dustin Poirier is going to smack him. But when you look at the bookies, people were all in on Benoit Saint-Denis. The disrespect from a number 12 to a number 3 at the bookmakers was absolutely crackers. Mm. And Dustin Poirier, one, taking the fight, shows what he's all about because it was a massive risk for him. You lose there, pal. Whoa. The gold's away. The gold's gone. You lose here, the gold's gone. But he takes it. And then the narrative of the 7 minutes of the fight are just peak Dustin Poirier. Just peak Dustin Poirier of him going, I'm a bigger dog than you, man. That's it. I can see your skills. You've got skills. Ain't no doubt about that, brother. Ain't no doubt about that. But you're going to have to do something very, very special to stop me because I'm Dustin Poirier. Yeah. And all the questions of the money that he's earned, the time that he's been in, where he's at in life. He don't need to be here. Dude's made fucking bank. He's sweet, man. He is sweet. But there's something in here that says, I'm Dustin Poirier. And I'm going to show these people Dustin Poirier. Mate, I was delighted for him. Because this motherfucker's still in the game and the dream is still alive. He's silenced an up-and-coming guy that is definitely going to be challenging for a world title one day. No doubt in my mind about that, about Benoit Saint-Denis. But Dustin Poirier's time is not done yet. He's still in the game. And are we giving him a title shot next? Is he the man? Fucking damn right he is. Let's go, Dustin. Let's go, baby.
I know we've got Charles Oliveira versus Sarukian coming up, and that has been dubbed as an official, maybe unofficial title eliminator. But right now, there's a clear indicator to go, well, actually, wait a minute. One of you needs to outdo that.
Yeah.
One of you, never mind winning, never mind eking through, a point win or whatever it might be. Either Charles Oliveira or Armin Sarukian need to do something more entertaining than what Dustin Poirier has just done to have any right to be joined to jump this queue against Islam Makhachev. Dustin Poirier just took on a massive, risky opponent, high pressure for all the reasons you've just said. At moments in that fight where any other multimillionaire would have gone,
fuck this.
Man, I'm done, I'm sound. Would have just took that shot, went down, whatever it might be. But Dustin Poirier has still got that same dog in him, that same fight inside him. It's the same fight, you know what, that won't allow Conor McGregor just to go, man, I've officially retired. You all know it. You know, I'm talking bullshit. It's that dog that's still in Conor deep down in there that makes him go, yeah, I'm back. Get me 3 fights this year. Get me this, get me that. It's all good and well, man. But your life is on a completely different tangent right now. Your money's taking you to a completely different place of wealth and of business and whatever else, family. Whereas Dustin has made that money and he's got other things, but he's still like this. He's still got the blinkers on. The one thing that got him into MMA would have been to become a champion, to become UFC champion. And he hasn't allowed the money and the success and the fame to get in the way. Now, don't get me wrong, Conor's a 2-weight world champion. He's done it. He's ticked the box. Dustin is now fighting for the right not to be one of the best fighters in the UFC that never won a title. That's what he's fighting to do. And right now, this version of Dustin Poirier with that kind of a reaction, mate, come on, who could deny him? It's Dustin Poirier. It's Dustin fucking Poirier. The guy deserves it on reputation. Never mind that performance. Over to you, Charles Oliveira and Saruki in a couple of weeks' time, I'm telling you.
Oh, mate, what a 7.5 minutes.
Brilliant. And Benoit Saint-Denis, by the way, he ain't going to be number 12 today when them rankings come back out.
No, he should go up
right into the top 10. He'll have jumped into the top 10 because he looked phenomenal. I just think he had a couple of moments where he could have finished the fight, but Dustin Poirier is Dustin Poirier, and he ain't that easy to put away.
It was just experience.
In that second round, he just got a bit carried away. He thought Dustin was more hurt than he actually was, and he fucking threw the kitchen sink at him. And I think Dustin was just able to be a little bit shrewder, keep his guard nice and high and just punch through those big hooks. And that's where he had the success. Benoit will go away and he'll go, fuck, there's the mistake right there. Blood rushed to the head. I went for it, and he wasn't quite ready to go. In fact, by going for it, I left myself open. Down to experience. I'll come back. I'll be a better fighter for it, and he will be.
Mate, that right hand. That right hand. Oh, Dustin Poirier, man. What are you doing to us? Taking us on a fucking magical mystery tour. Yeah. Can I just say, because you brought up his name a couple of times there, and I've said this on the TNT show. I don't know if people watching this saw on the Friday. When you have a fight week for the UFC, you have loads of little different bits of media obligations. And just before the weigh-in, they will have like a host. I think it was Megan, actually, that was hosting this one. Bisping's done a few and a couple of other people. Yeah, so you have a host on stage.
Like a Q&A.
Yeah, and like three or four fighters from an upcoming event in order to hype the crowd up and get them excited so they can use media clips and put it out on social media. So they had a few fighters on stage. I think with Megan was up there. And Omen Sarukian was one of the fighters that were up there. And obviously, yeah, he's got a fight coming up with Charles Oliveira at UFC 300. And it's a sensational fight. We know it's a sensational fight. Charles Oliveira is in a proper fight. He knows that. The world knows that. And these dickheads come out the fucking crowd. And what happens in these Q&As is that they have microphones in the crowd and you can walk up to the microphone, you can ask a question. Now, Norm, obviously we've seen the funny ones in the past where people are singing to Holly Holm, I love you, baby, all that type of stuff. And we've seen, you know, people start songs at the Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo one, a little bit disrespectful towards Jose Aldo, but, you know, we've seen it. The way that people were speaking to Armin Sarukian in Miami was fucking disgusting, man. They're not MMA fans. They're not proper MMA UFC fans. Just knobheads. Absolute knobheads. And people need to do better, mate. That's all I'm saying. People need to do better. It pissed me off that because that lad, elite martial artist, quality fighter, he's going right to the top. He knows he's up against it against Charles Oliveira. And I have no problem with any fan out there thinking, I'm a Charles Oliveira fan. But respect the other fucking dude. That's what this sport is built on. Not Neanderthals fucking pissed up in the crowd, screaming and shouting, you're going to get fucked up, or whatever they were shouting to him, along those lines. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it was really unusual, to be honest with you. I didn't expect to see that clip at all.
I've never seen it before.
I didn't watch... I've got to be honest, I didn't watch the full Q&A to put it into context.
I've only seen those clips.
Yeah, the clips were horrific. Maybe early on, Armin Sarukian was calling everyone from Miami, you know, see you next Tuesday or whatever.
But Armin Sarukian, you've met him. He hasn't done that.
No, I know. Exactly, yeah. We've had him on this show, and he's an absolute diamond. Sarukian, to be honest with you, and incredibly talented. Weird. I've got no other way to describe it. And it was multiple people as well from multiple corners of the room. Very strange. You know, had it been in Rio or something, or Charles Oliveira's backyard, then yeah, fair enough. But, you know, that's just the Brazilians getting carried away maybe or whatever. But for that to happen in Miami, just weird. Just weird. You know, I can't believe people didn't take a swipe at them, to be honest with you.
Like proper MMA fans in the crowd should just go, what the fuck are you lot going on about, you dicks? Anyway, great fight that we're looking forward to at UFC 300. He's all in on Poirier and Makhachev for the title. Maybe Charles Oliveira, who's never in a shit fight, is probably going to have something to say about that. And don't forget as well, just to get you, Max Holloway might just raise their heads above the parapet going, whoa, why is everybody getting carried away?
Yeah.
I'm the guy.
Yeah,
we'll find out. Exactly. We'll find out. But all in all, Dustin Poirier, he's done his job now. Back to Lafayette, chilling, feet up, going, do better than that, lads. See you.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Michael Venom Page, man. The fucking bollocks on this lad. Just unreal, innit? Making his UFC debut. Loads of doubt around you. You've been crushing cans, they've been saying. I think we've even said it. Come on, you're in Bellator. It's not the Champions League, son. We need to be up there. Makes the choice of going to the UFC. Now we're here. They've match made you really well against Kevin Holland. Are you what we believe you to be? Are you the real deal? This is the chance to go and show that. Then the motherfucker turns up as the Undertaker. Dances his little ass off all the way to the... I'm thinking, Mike, you better perform here, mate, because this could be a meme in a minute, right? You better be mint. Gets in the cage.
Yeah.
Is mint for 15 minutes. Oh, what? The only thing it didn't have was the rubber stamp. He just didn't get the knockout moment, did he? But everything else, Michael Venom Page, welcome to the UFC, son. Where have you been? Why is it taking you so long?
Yeah.
Tremendous. Delighted for him as well. Delighted because he's a lovely, lovely lad.
He is, yeah. And listen, all credit to Kevin Holland as well for taking on an unranked guy and a new guy and a very dangerous opponent as well. You don't want to be that guy. Of course, exactly, yeah. But I want to say credit to Kevin Holland for taking this fight. But Michael Venom Page did Michael Venom Page things. Just because the name on the octagon changed and the name on the back of his gloves changed didn't mean that he was going to change his style whatsoever. And he went in there and they proved that when it comes to the striking exchanges, especially, he's a complete unique individual. I know he's got a similar style to Wonderboy, but Wonderboy mixes it a bit more now, whereas he sticks to that karate point score and roots that he's got, that kickboxing score and roots. But he bounces on his toes. He's so far out, at least 4, maybe 5 feet away from your opponents. He's just, the range is ridiculous. And yet, he's 36 now, Michael Page. The speed in which he moves, the fast twitch muscle fiber that he's got is absolutely incredible. He cracks you with the overhand right. You're there and you think he's out of range. Boom, he hits you with the overhand right. And you're like, well, who hit me then? Who the fuck hit me with that? It's incredible how fast he is.
He doesn't be out his feet planting though as well. It's amazing. Yeah. He's mid-air.
Yeah, it's incredible. That just shows you how hard he can hit. But again, it's that old saying, isn't it? It's the punch you don't see that does the damage. It's the speed in which he does it. Where you're like, right, he's miles away. I'm sound here. Blink, bang. What the f*** was that? And it worked so well. And Kevin Holland had no answer for it. Even when he poured forward, Kevin Holland poured forward. MVP's got really nice footwork moving backwards, just danced away, bump, bump, loads of pivots, loads of slip into the side. And when he goes backwards, he throws power shots as well. Mate, he's a wonderful addition to this welterweight division. He really is. And now it's about how do we get a Brit-on-Brit violence title fight? How do we get him to Leon Edwards for a stadium in the UK?
We had an interesting chat with Bisping last night about it, didn't we? Like, I was with you. I was of the thought, Michael Venom Page, Wonderboy makes an awful lot of sense for Manchester, right? If we're doing a card in Manchester, Wonderboy's ace. He's a point striker. There's no wrestling in that fight between these two dudes. They're just going to have it. Great fight. But then Bisping chucked up Ian Garry. If you want to get to a title fight, then obviously you've brought Michael Venom Page in. He says, I'm here for a good time. Not here for a long time, I'm here for a good time. That's what I'm here for. I want to get to the top level and see if we can get a fight with Leon.
Yeah.
Does beating Wonderboy, points, whatever, get you closer? I think, listen, it's fun and I'd love to watch it. But beating Ian Garry gets you there quicker. If you're looking to do this in the next 12 months, 6 to 12 months, beating Ian Garry gets you there quicker. I'm not saying he's going to do that, but if he did do it, I think it gets you there quicker than beating Wonderboy.
It does. And a year ago, that kind of statement would have been absolutely ridiculous. But obviously, Ian Garry and the amount of media attention that he's had over the last 6 months, especially, and the fact that he's now up at number 6 in the rankings, which is 2 spots ahead of Stephen Thompson, absolutely gets you there quicker. But in fact, they're all going to tumble down a spot now, aren't they? Because obviously, Jack Della Maddalena's just beat Gilbert Burns, who was at 4. Mm. So Jack's going to jump up to the top five now, which means they're all going to bump down one. So that is fascinating to see how he's going to do it. I think Michael Venom Page and signing with the UFC would have gone, right, this is the route I want to go. I want Kevin Holland. Then I want this. Then I want that. I'm not saying he demands these things, but I'm saying if I beat Kevin Holland, get me this type of opponent. If I beat that guy, and at some stage you're going to face heavy wrestlers, the likes of Sean Brady and people like that who are really strong wrestlers. But I was blind to it. I was like, Wonder Boy all day. If he wins, Wonder Boy. I want to see that. I want to see that mirror image, that Spider-Man meme where they're just pointing at each other. I want to see that happen. And I think that's a favourable fight for Wonder Boy as well. Whereas Ian Garry wasn't really on my radar. Ian Garry was like, okay. When Bisping said it, I'm like, shit. That's a fight that draws an awful lot of emotion. Would it be good for Ian Garry? No. I don't think it works for Ian Garry. The guy's only just come in. He's had one fight. He's ranked below you. Also, Ian Garry struggles.
They're going to rank him, though. They're going to rank him off the back of beating Kevin Holland.
They will, but they're not going to rank him anywhere near Ian Garry, who's currently six and will probably be seven by the end of today. But he's going to be top 12, top 15.
Yeah, 12, 13, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. The other way I would look at it is Ian Garry going to want to fight a British and Irish fighter in this period of time when the only people cheering for him are British and Irish fans? You know, okay, maybe some Brazilians as well. Nobody in North America is cheering for Ian Garry right now. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They want his head on a plate. Not that he cares, but fan bases are important. And it, you know, so I don't know whether that's the right fight for Ian Garry. And again, I'm being a bit too sensible now. Would I want to see it? You're goddamn right. I'd love to see it. You're goddamn right. I would love to see it. But if I'm Ian Garry, Colby Covington all day.
Oh, it's your turn to be the hero.
It's your turn to be the guy that gets rid of the guy, the cringe guy in the division. Yeah. And basically score yourself a title fight. You beat Colby Covington, you get in the next title fight.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what they do here, Michael. Mate, I loved every minute of it because I know that Dana is so against those bespoke ring walks and they let him. He comes out with fucking cape on, the full Undertaker, purple lights, all that. And he just absolutely, he owned it. Fair play.
I think we'll see a lot more of that as well because I think the Undertaker himself put props on social media about it. Don't forget, they're all under one banner now, WWE and UFC. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of that as we move forward.
Michel Pereira, when he walked out, did you see that? Right. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
I was like, going, what's going on here? Next thing you know, they're having a full dance routine, him and his little mate. Boy, let's go.
I'm all into that, though. I like that. I think that's part of the entertainment value. I've got no issue with that whatsoever.
Of course, of course. That's what you're paying your money for.
Speaking about this welterweight division.
Yeah.
He did it, didn't he? Jack called out the bogeyman after an incredible performance against Gilbert Burns, which is going to get him ranked in the top five now. He called out the bogeyman. That is so brave of Jack Della Maddalena, but it also shows the strength of mind to go, you know what? Give me the guy nobody wants. The champion don't want him. Nobody wants to fight this guy. No one wants to say his name. But if I beat Shavkat, I'm getting the next title fight.
Hang on. The champion said yes to Shavkat. Shavkat said no because of Ramadan. Don't be giving me this nonsense, mate. Don't be giving me that. The champion said yes.
No one says yes to Shavkat. Listen,
the champion said yes to three of them and none of them wanted the smock, son. That's why we're not going to UFC 300. But you're right in what you're saying. Jack Della Maddalena. Awesome. Last couple of times out, split decisions, questions. This time, listen, you're fighting a real dude here, and you're down. You are down on the cards, officially.
Correct.
I mean, I think most people watching it may have had it 1-1 going into three, but you're losing that third.
I should have said, but Gilbert Byrne was winning the third round, so he was losing the fight.
Yeah, but the two of the judges had Burns 2-up, so they had him 2-up and winning the third. Jack Della Maddalena had to find something, and he did. Yes, there's a mistake in there for Gilbert Burns. Yes, Gilbert Burns is ahead. But you've got to take advantage of him. You've got to be good enough. You've got to be savvy enough. You've got to be quick enough in order to take advantage of those slight errors. And it's only a slight error. It's a tiny, tiny moment. And bang, up that knee went. And Jack Della Maddalena turned the fight on its head and got himself now an opportunity to be fighting top fivers.
Yeah. And all credit to him. I thought he was to come through it like that just shows what he's made out of. You know, he didn't lose heart in that third round when his corner of the team had told him. His corner of the team basically said to him, you need to finish here. Because they knew the first round was, even though he won the first round on my card and sounds like yours, corner team knew the first round was close.
Close.
They knew Burns won the second round. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the Jack's corner team are saying to him, go out there and get the finish. Don't let it happen. Go out there and get the finish. Claim that top five spot. And to face the kind of adversity he did in that round. Then with 90 seconds to go, a minute and a half to go, he's losing the round. And then suddenly he lands the kick. He lands the left hook. Boom, boom. Burns starts reeling. And he just took that opportunity and just rained down those heavy elbows. Once he was hit, there was absolutely no way Jack was letting him off the hook. And that, for me, showed a different level to Jack Della Maddalena's game. We know how talented this guy is. Everyone's been telling us, and we've seen it in his first four fights. The last two fights, both split decisions. And he's the quiet man of the division, isn't he? He ain't the guy. He ain't going to come out with no WWE ring walk. He ain't going to come up there and set the world on fire with the microphone. That's just not who he is, his personality is. He, as much as anyone, probably could do with a Paul Bearer type guy doing the speaking for him.
He does, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. but in calling out Shavkat, in saying Shavkat's name,
great.
In a division where no one says Shavkat's name, means he'll probably get the Shavkat fight. He'll probably get it next. So good for him. Because then, guess what? You beat Shavkat, you can't be denied. You cannot be denied an opportunity at the title.
Yeah. I like him a lot.
He's welterweight to making moves, kid.
Yeah, they are.
Making moves.
It's a hot division. Very, very hot division. One person as well that I'm absolutely delighted for is Peory Yan. The last thing you want when you've championed someone and they prove you right and they get to the top, you don't just want them to fall off and
go quietly into the night.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want that. You want them to go out with a little bit of a bang and a little bit of a thing. Peory Yan hasn't fought for a year. He's lost his last three. Yes, it's top guys. Mirab picked him up, ragdolled him all over the gaff, but the other two fights are pretty tight fights against the other top contenders, right? Mm-hmm. Now, coming into this, he's fighting a guy that the pennies dropped with in Song Yudong. And after 5 minutes, I thought he was going to get battered, mate. After 5 minutes, I'm watching this fight thinking to myself, Song Yudong just looked bigger, stronger, faster. Peory's timing's off.
Yeah.
He looks a tiny little bit lost in this first 5 minutes. And I was like, no, man, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this young buck batter him. I don't want to see it. And then all of a sudden, Peory went back to his corner. He sits down and goes, right, Ruster's gone. Don't worry about that. I've seen it now. Don't worry about that. I'll sort this out. And he just went, right, I'm going to have to put myself at risk. That's what he did. That's how he changed it. I'm going to have to put myself at risk here, knowing full well that this kid does crack. He could put me out. But I'm going to have to go into this fire here to get my work off before he gets his work off. And when he gets it off, I'm going to have to re-answer him. I thought he turned the heat up beautifully. Song tried to go away, but Pete just kept going. Just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. And by the time we get into the third round, he was back. The old Peory Yan was back, range control, brilliant on the kickboxing. Yeah, here's my hands, here's my wrestling. Here's my wrestling, here's my hands. It was, mate, he was back. And I was like, yes! Again, it's one of them that we saw earlier on in the night, later on in the night, young, hot contender coming through, old guard says not today. Brilliant from Peory Yan, really good.
Yeah, well, he bucked the trend, didn't he? Because the rest of the young guys or the new guys got wins, but
apart from that's what I was referring to.
That's what I mean. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. The in terms of Yudong, he looked great. I thought Yudong started the fight really well. He looks so strong. He looks like he's got the experience to add to the raw talent and ability. I was thinking end of round one. I'm thinking here we go, Yudong. This was always going to be a dangerous one for Peory Yan. Because Yudong is just so strong. And now he's got the experience. Now he's won a couple of main events at the Apex. You can see he's ready to kick on. And 6-7 minutes in, I'm like, yeah, sorry, Mr. Yan. Time waits for no man. And then somewhere around the middle of the early in the second round, he just started to turn things around. You know, he started landing those uppercuts, started really hurting Yudong. And he just, his boxing got bang back on point again. Suddenly there's Peory Yan with his amazing boxing, so mixing up the takedowns as well. He got a really big takedown at the end of the second round. He got a big takedown at the end of the third round as well, which he finished with ground and pound. These are all visually important things for the judges to see. Landed a big elbow that cut the eye at the back end of round two as well. It was Jan in free flow state, you know, and Yudong couldn't go with him. Once he got in that spot, Yudong wasn't able to do anything to break that rhythm and to get him out of it again. He kept pushing, he kept trying. But by then, it was just like the Piotr Jan show. I thought he was excellent, well-deserving of victory. And just let everybody know, I'm not done in this weight division yet. I'm not done. You know, he got beat on a split by Sean O'Malley as well. There's a lot of, a lot of chat about that. That's a fight that could be run back down the line as well. Not next, but could be run back down the line.
He called out Cheeto, didn't he? He said, listen, he's coming off a title fight. I want him.
That makes sense. Makes absolute sense.
I think we know who Tom Aspinall's fighting next, don't we? It's not the one-dimensional Gialton Almeida. It's the experienced Curtis Blaydes. So if you speak to Tom about Curtis Blaydes, he said, listen, he could be the biggest challenge in the heavyweight division because of how good that wrestling base is and how heavy his hands are. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to go along with that because you look at everybody else and, they're multifaceted. There's some good talent. If you take Jones, I'm talking John Jones, out the equation and the rest of the contenders coming through, everybody else is elite in one department and maybe has holes in the game elsewhere. Cyril Gane would be a prime example. Jaden Almeida at the weekend, another prime example. Curtis Blaydes probably the most well-rounded. You know, he can crack you and his wrestling base is really, really good. And he's obviously extremely experienced, of which played into his favour at the weekend because he had a look in that first round thinking, right, what's this kid going to do? All right, you're doing what you did against Jairzinho. Right, okay, yeah. Right, you're not finishing me because I know what I'm doing here. So go on, carry on. Right, okay, right. That it? Sound. Right, what are you going to do in the second round? Oh, you're going to do the same thing, are you? Right, well, I'm waiting for it now, you prat. Here we go then. Take these. Bang, bang, bang. It was a bit basic. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. A bit basic. And Curtis Blaydes took care of what was put in front of him.
I think Almeida just got completely exposed for being what he is. And that's a grappling jiu-jitsu guy and nothing else. He had no confidence really in his hands at all, I thought. And he was always looking for the same thing. And as soon as he dove in on that single leg and held on to it in the manner in which he did, he completely proved his limitations. And you can't allow...
Well, it's a levels thing, isn't it? It's
course,
a levels thing.
You can't allow a guy as big as Blaydes to just hammer fist you. Bomb, bomb, bomb. You know, you've got to let go. You've got to change position there. You can't just hold on to it and think you're going to ride it out. There's just no way.
If you look at Almeida's full career outside UFC, he's got that loss there. And that loss was a knockout loss, right? So from speaking to people who know him a little bit and that team, he's fallen in love with the path of least resistance is what's happened to him. Because when he stood up, he's felt, oh, I can be beaten here. So now I'll go back to this. And this has led him to this particular point. So he's thinking, well, this works all the time. This is a levels game at the end of the day.
Of course.
When you get to that level, hang on a minute, mate, you can't just do one thing. You have to do more than that. He'll learn from it. He's still young enough. He'll definitely learn from it. But he has to round that game out if he's going to compete with these top boys. Because if Blaydes is doing that, what would Tom have done to him?
Well, exactly, yeah. And the red flag, of course, was Derek Lewis going 25 minutes with Derek Lewis for 21 and a half minutes of top control time. And not finishing him then means that any decent striker, anyone that can counter that and get the fight back to the feet, he was always going to be in trouble. But it was just there, like, I'll die. The way he dove in for that single leg at the start of the second and was like, I'm just going to die on this hill. But you did die on the hill. You just got clubbed to death by Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah.
So he drops back down. Blaydes absolutely reignites that rivalry with Tom Aspinall. And suddenly for me, Tom has got a clear
fight
opponent.
Yeah.
He's got a clear fight. You know, there's obviously we want the Jones-Stipe. Neither of them want to fight Tom Aspinall. So he needed a clear standout opponent. Curtis Blaydes has just proven himself to be the clear standout opponent. And he'll get it. He'll get the opportunity.
Yeah. Jojo says goodbye. Nearly does it with a spinning back fist. Hey, good on her. I'm delighted for her, man, to go out with a victory. Good performance. Had to rally in that last round, and she did. She just went, it's my last 5 minutes at UFC here.
I'm going for it.
I'm going to show you a few party tricks, kids. Here we go. Let's go. went through everything, spinning back fist, nearly got the kid out with that spinning back fist. That would have been just the rubber stamp on it. But comes through good. She's been a delight to interview over the years. Really lovely person outside of the Octagon. Always got time for fans. You see her all the time at fighter hotels, don't you? Like, we have fans outside, pictures and autographs and all that type of stuff. I'm sure everybody's got a lot of wicked things to say about her. When the door shuts, she's a savage. And listen, we've had a crack on this show about her, haven't we? She goes full Begbie, man. I don't know what it is. She's very softly spoken, and then all of a sudden it just kicks off inside that Octagon, and she's been brilliant, brilliant servant to the UFC. She's had a brilliant career. And whatever she's up to next, I'm sure she's going to be incredibly successful.
I think it's cracking on, isn't it? Hopefully starting a family. I know she's got a family there, but I think she's got other aspirations in life as well. And she's had a phenomenal career. You know, you think she's had 17 fights in the UFC. There's not many British fighters that achieve anything like that, you know. I think Darren Till and Dan Hardy, who both fought for the title, both fought for the UFC title, didn't have any more than 12 UFC fights. You know, not many get into deep double figures.
Is there Bisping in it? Activity.
I think there's a few others. Ross Pearson had a few,
yeah.
And Brad had a few as well. So, you know, she's not alone, but I'm saying she joins an elite club. There's not many Brits that get to do deep double figures, and she's there, and she's been there on merit. She's had a fantastic career, and it'll be in the very near future, whether it's a girl out of Las Vegas, whether it's a girl out of Montreal, where she was for a while, whether it's a girl out of Glasgow in Scotland or somewhere else in Scotland, one day there will be a girl coming to UFC, and when you ask the question, she will go, "Oh, I fell in love with it because I seen JoJo Calderwood at the time. I seen JoJo Wood. She inspired me. She showed me that a girl from my neighborhood, my town where she lived, made it and did it on the biggest stage, and she inspired me. And that's going to be her legacy, and that's an incredible legacy to have. A pioneer that inspired the generation. Good for her. What a way to go out.
Yeah. My girl got a little bit teary, didn't she? Joanna, Jędrzejczyk.
In the Hall of Famer.
There, mate. Delighted for her. What a woman. What a woman. What a fighter. And we knew it were happening. It's just when they were going to induct her, that's all. And what an opportunity for her to get one of them jackets and cement.
Just nice to be the only woman, you know, only the second woman yet to be put in the Hall of Fame after Ronda Rousey. That speaks volumes.
Yeah, good for her. Top, man. She's top, man.
Did you see, before we sign off on this, because I know you want to talk about Doumbé, but I just want to say Robles Despenyan made his UFC debut, the big Cuban in the heavyweight division. 18 seconds, and a knockout. Sensational. Yeah. And also, Mateus Gamrot's got a massive win over RDA as well.
Never mind that, right? Yesterday, I'm sat on the couch waiting for the Liverpool City game, right? Flicking through Instagram, have a bit of a catch up with some of the post-fight interviews and all that type of stuff. I've heard us doing stuff with TNT. And my daughter is like literally led on me because I've been away a weekend. This is what she does. She uses me as a couch, right? So she's led on me and she's watching what I'm looking at. Then she goes, Mr. Beast! I said, you what? Mr. Beast! And I went, wait, go back. I scrolls it back. She goes, Mr. Beast! And I went, oh, yeah. Mr. Beast, front row. For those that don't have kids and have no idea who this dude is, right? Mr. Beast, one of the greatest YouTubers on the planet. He's front and centre with Logan Paul, I think he was sat next to, actually. At the UFC having a whale of a time. So there you go, Mr. Beast is now in the big UFC fan. He's in on the hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get your Beast bars. Get your snacks.
That was like us running around New York, remember, trying to find Mr. Beast bars for the kids. Speaking about that segues in nicely. So you're such a professional. Speaking about celebrities. I counted Jibril Cissé and Mo Sissoko, two former Liverpool, one European Cup winner there, ringside for Cedric Doumbé, which was absolutely gigantic, that fight. Was that Thursday night?
Yeah.
It was Thursday, yeah.
It was like
PFL, the first show in Europe this year. in the Accor Arena in France. We've been there before. The atmosphere is absolutely unbelievable. And there's, you know, if there's a bigger star in all of French sports right now than Cedric Doumbé, I'd be surprised. He was absolutely...
What about Kylian Mbappé? He's pretty big.
Mbappé buys tickets to watch Doumbé. He's a superstar. But I tell you what, mate, he needs to learn the rules, kid, because you've got to fight. You can't get in that octagon and pick and choose when you fight. I know Mark Goddard's got an awful lot of stick for this, but maybe the stick should be directed at one person, one person alone. And that's Cedric Doumbé. If you get in that cage, mate, you've got to fight. Don't care whether you've got a splinter or not. You big Jesse.
Oh, shut up, man. Listen, Mark Goddard knows the rules better than anybody. Right? Yeah. He wrote the bloody rules. He is the rules. Yeah. I think there's a communication error here. Because obviously...
You can't stop fighting. You can't choose to stop fighting.
Are you
going
to let me... Listen, calm. I'm with you, right? He is obviously pointed that there's a problem with his foot. Now, automatically, yeah. if you're Mark, when have you ever come across there's a splinter in my foot in an MMA fight? I've never seen it. Never happened,
in any
right? No. So automatically, that's not in Mark's head. Right, so he's there, he's doing his thing. Doumbé points to something. So, if I'm Mark, I can only speak for myself. So, if I'm Mark, I'm thinking he's pointing that there's an injury or something. Yeah. Right now, in that case, you can't stop the fight, man. You fight on, man. It's a fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody just goes, no, something over your foot. I don't care. He's not thinking there's an external thing here. He's thinking, no, mate, get on with it. You get on with the fight. Now, the scenario then that plays out between the two fighters is a case of opponent says to Doumbé, what's going on? He doesn't want to fight. He then flags it to Mark. Doumbé then, they both then kind of stop, and Mark waves it off. So, to the letter of the law, Mark's right. He's absolutely right. He's not done anything wrong, and I'm not having to do it. Mr. Goddard, I don't want the phone call, Mark. Don't ring me, all right? I'm just saying you were absolutely right. However... Correct. Is there a case here then? Because this is a fucking weird one, right? It is weird. Is there a case then of saying, right, we're going to have to write something else into the unified rules in order to be able to issue, for example, I don't know if you saw this actually, and I thought about it in the immediate moment. I can't remember what fight it was. Petr Yan, there was a timeout in the Petr Yan fight because he had tape in his glove.
Yeah.
If you remember.
No, the tape had come loose and he had to cut it.
Tape had come loose in the glove and he had to cut it. So Keith Peterson stopped the action for a second.
Yeah.
And had to go and stop that.
Stop that tape. Yes.
Yes. So when that
happened, that's a wardrobe malfunction, yeah.
Right. So wardrobe malfunction or external things. So not an injury, not something that's been you've caused yourself or it's been caused throughout the course of the fight. It's an external thing. So obviously Doumbé stood on something that is inside that octagon, hasn't he? I'm not saying it's a wardrobe malfunction, but it's something external that has come in that he stood on and it shouldn't be there. It's not like he's booted somebody and he's broke his foot or someone's booted him and he's broke his foot or something like that.
Yeah.
Do we write something externally, additionally, into the rules now where we have to cater for that? Because that could have been dealt with within seconds. It could have been dealt with and that fight could have continued. We could have had that timeout, very similar to what we saw in the Petr Yan fight. A couple of seconds. Doc, come in here. Yank that out. Bang. Right. Sweet. You okay? Let's go. And we could have been back in action for 30 seconds later, couldn't we?
So what if they stop? One sec. Go away. Just the wife. So what if, okay, what if, let's play that scenario out. What if they stop the fight? They go, right, Doc, get inside the octagon. Doc climbs inside. Yeah, something in my toe. Looks at his toe. Yeah, I can't see anything. Oh, it's just a bit of your toenail. I think there's nothing there. Oh, okay. I thought I felt something in my toe. All right, then get out then, Doc. Close the cage again, right? We're okay to fight now. Where does that end? Where does that end in terms of fighters go, you know what? I've got something in my back there. I've got something fell down the back of my shorts. I've stood on something. Oh, there's something inside my glove. There's no end to it. You know what you're signing up for. This is a fist fight. You're getting in there and you're going to fight. We've seen John Jones fight on with broken toes. Broken toe is a visual. You can see that. Oh, my God, he's broke his toe. He actually got it caught in the cage. It wasn't from kicking someone. He got his toe caught in the cage. How many broken fingers have we seen from people getting it caught on shorts or material? You got a broken finger. That's a visual. Oh, my God, I can see you got a broken finger. So what? It's a fight. Stood on a piece of glass. So what? It's a fucking fight. Fight. He's an experienced man, Doumbé. And to you can't stop a fight because a fighter goes, wait a minute, I've got a problem. Yeah, exactly that. Your problem. Deal with it and get to the end of the round and get it dealt with. It's your own fault. We've just started round three, but you've just stood on it, or it was in your foot. When you mention it in between rounds two and three, or we just stood on something now. The whole thing was just I put every single bit of blame on Doumbé. Every single bit of blame should go on Doumbé. And is it any wonder he did it? If he'd have won the first round and the second round in fine fashion, like we all expected him to do, or people expect him to do, I didn't. I told you back he was dangerous as hell. Yeah. Had he won the first two rounds comfortably and was doing the Cedric Doumbé show, do you think he'd have stopped then? Or do you think maybe the going was a little bit too tough for Cedric Doumbé?
Oh! You're a bad
man. There you go. That'll get the comment section going.
There you go.
Gibral's going to kill me. Cissé will text me going berserk. I've just said that. But you know what? You've got to understand what, when you get locked inside that cage, when you step inside the ring, Doumbé knows you can't volunteer to, you can't say, I need to stop the fight. I have
time
a
out.
Problem.
You can't have a timeout. Yeah.
You can't have a timeout. You can't go, wait a minute, there might be something in my foot. I need to go, but nah, man, that there's no end to that then. You might get hit with the right hand and then go, actually, ref, can I just stop the fight a sec? Because I think my box has come out. We've seen Bisping. Remember Bisping's box snapped and his fucking box was sliding down the leg? And he was like that, trying to poke his bollocks back inside it and stick it back in.
Well,
he didn't
Bisping,
ask for a timeout.
Well, Bisping. Gum shield out, points to the gum shield, and then Anderson Silva smokes him with a fucking big boy.
And as right, Herb Dean didn't go, whoa, stop, put that gum shield in. A referee will wait for the right moment, a break in the action to go, right, breaking the action here, gum shield in. There wasn't a break. You can't tell the referee when to stop the fight. Mark was right. I don't think you had to even know about the rules. Oh, Mark Goddard knows the rules better than everyone. That doesn't matter. I know what the rules are. It's a first fight. Get in there and fight. Got something wrong with your toe? So what? Tough.
Stopped by a splinter. Is it belter, isn't it?
It's absolutely embarrassing. If I was Cedric Doumbé, I'd be embarrassed today. Yeah, I did have a splinter in my toe. And what? Jesus Christ.
Let's be honest. They do hurt. I've had a couple in my time, mate. They do hurt. Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, dear.
The best thing about it, right? Listen, I'm on the same page as you. Goddard was right, yeah?
Of course he was.
He would have loved walking from the cage to the dressing room, wouldn't he? Through all that. Can you imagine all the shit that would have come in his way? Just marching straight on. Done my job, jog on.
He did do his job.
This is
100% on Doumbé. And I feel for the kid. If he stood on a piece of glass or whatever, you know, incidentally, we haven't seen...
Mate, what I think he's done, from what I've seen, he does pull his foot along the mat. So I think maybe a piece of the... You know, like a little piece of the sharp thread, maybe from the stitching or something like that has come off the... There's no way there's a piece of wood in there. Where's the wood come from? It's not in there.
No, there might well be. You know, because this is an issue with MMA in general. After every fight, 14 cornermen climb in for photographs or managers and everything, sometimes family members.
So maybe off someone's
foot. It could
foot,
be stuck
right?
to
yeah,
someone's
yeah.
foot. So it may well have been a bit of glass. It may well have been a bit of wood.
Yeah, you're right.
No, these are the breaks, kid. It's a fight. You know what you're signing up for. You cannot volunteer to end. Just stop there a sec. I might have something wrong with me toe. Because there's no end to it then. You have to engage. You have to fight.
Yeah.
So that loss will remain a loss that will never, ever be over.
Oh, it's a loss.
If he wants it back, then he needs to rematch it. I'd be more embarrassed about the fact that the loss is TKO, splinter in toe. Jesus Christ. Now, whoever fights Doumbé next, whether it's Baki or someone else.
Oh, then he's going to bring it out. Plank of wood and all sorts of shit.
The dog and he does. First thing you do at the weigh-ins, give him a set of tweezers. Yeah, mate, just in case you get a splinter, you get that tweezers out. He's going to get loads put back on him. Hiring an ambulance to be outside in a room. You went back. Did you go back to the ambulance with your splinter? Did you get it out in the ambulance that you hired, Mr. Dumbe? Oh, man. Hilarious. Hilarious.
Mate.
Big fan of Dumbe, by the way, but I just
massive fan of him. And great atmosphere as well.
Yeah.
I tell you what I love about those productions, and this is obviously bigging up another one of our mates. Dan loves that little pen, doesn't he? He loves that little pen. So you're watching the PFL, and Dan Hardy is obviously on the comms, and he's one of the greatest brains ever. And he tells you shit that's going to happen in 3 minutes' time, which is mad. Yeah. I love it. But he does it now. They've given him a pen. They've given him a pen, and he's on the screen going, just watch this. He's holding this here. And then he'll highlight that particular moment. So just keep an eye on that. I'll come back to that in a minute when he lands this big left hand. And then a minute later, bang, there it is. Oh, mate. It does actually enhance my learning experience. I think if he goes OTT with it, which he's not doing, I'm not saying that, Dan, if you're listening, I think it could become a little bit too much. But he just does enough. He just, every now and again, he'll just flick the screen. He'll go, watch this, footwork. Right, yeah. And then a minute later, something will happen. You go, right, okay. There you go. Learned a little bit something. He's in his element there, though, with that pen, isn't he? He loves it. He loves all that stuff. Great atmosphere. Good event. Solid from the PFL. Obviously, a few bits of disappointment in there for British fight fans. Jack Grant giving the thumbs up to the fans as he's getting choked out every couple of minutes. Love all that. But all in all, solid. Apart from Dumbe's splinter.
Poor Dedrick. Getting some tweezers for Christmas.
Anyway, there you go. Thank you very much for tuning into our show. You can see the little red button underneath Nick's window there. Hit that. It'll ask you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you can do it, that'd be amazing. Thank you very much. You'll never miss out on any of our content that is coming your way. We're also available on audio as well via our website, fightdisciples.com. Go get yourself stuck in and you can have an audio feed, Google Play, Spotify, whatever you need. It's all there for you. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
Sweet.